From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
You know, as I've traveled the state, what I'm hearing from people is that they hear the economy is improving, but they don't see it happening. They certainly don't see it in Normal with the Mitsubishi plant shut down. They don't see it in Granite City with the steel mill laid off 2,000 workers 2 days after Christmas. They're not seeing it in Peoria where Caterpillar is building a new factory plant in Malaysia.
I am seeking re-election to the Senate to serve as the thoughtful, independent voice that always puts Illinois ahead of a party, to make sure that I could serve as the glue of the Senate, especially with my profound thought about my role in this country, especially with the recovery from my stroke.
I think it's a bit surprising that Kirk is not doing as well in the collar counties as you would expect a Republican candidate. I have looked at the crosstabs with military family or current military, and she actually did somewhat better than he did on those who claim to be military families.
SIU Carbondale professor John Jackson, he's talking about the latest poll from the Paul Simon Public Policy Institute that came out this week. And he was discussing the race for the U.S. Senate, where earlier this week, the major party candidates met in a public forum with the editorial board of the Chicago Tribune. And you heard from both those candidates, the Democratic Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth and the Republican incumbent Senator Mark Kirk. We'll discuss that and more coming up on today's State Week. In Springfield, I'm Sean Crawford, joined today by Charlie Wheeler. Charlie runs the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Also on our panel today, Amanda Vinicky, State House Bureau Chief for Illinois Public Radio, and Brian Mackey, IPR reporter. Brian, you took a hard look at those numbers from the Simon Institute and that poll. It found that Democrats in the state doing pretty well. Can you give us sort of an overview of that?
Yeah, Democrats starting at the top of the ticket. Hillary Clinton, the Democratic presidential nominee, is doing much better than Donald Trump, 53% to his 28%, not quite doubling, but just a huge margin. That's not really unexpected. Illinois has voted for the Democratic presidential candidate every year since 1992. We went for Bill Clinton that year, and it's been a pretty much solidly blue state at the presidential level, at least, ever since. On the United States Senate race, Congresswoman Tammy Duckworth is doing a little worse than Clinton. She's at about 48%, but still well ahead, 14 points ahead of incumbent Republican Senator Mark Kirk, who is just 6 percentage points ahead of Trump. This is, at one point was going to be one of the most hotly contested and most watched races in the country. But this poll, there were a couple of other, Illinois has not polled all that often because we're not a battleground state. But this poll, compared to earlier ones, shows a widening margin. It's hard to just take one poll as a sort of definitive assessment. But if you compare it to the other two, it's Duckworth seems to be pulling ahead in this race.
And any idea why they think that's the case? I mean, I know Jackson looks at these quite in depth. I mean, it's got to be more than just the fact that the state is predominantly Democrat. Does it have to do with the presidential race or something Mark Kirk's done or said?
Yeah, well, I think obviously Kirk has had a hard time with he has painted himself as a moderate, as we heard at that clip in the beginning of the show. He says he's the glue of the Senate. He sort of prides himself. He was the first, even though he won't necessarily say he would back Merrick Garland, President Obama's nominee for the United States Supreme Court. He does like to point out that he was the first Republican to at least even meet with President Obama's nominee for the United States Supreme Court, which I guess is a pretty low bar for bipartisanship these days, but that's where we are in the country right now. Illinois does tend to go Democratic during presidential years, and I think that Kirk, I mean, he came to power in 2010, which was the big Tea Party wave year, and so he's got a much tougher row to hoe this time around.
Charlie, though, Mark Kirk is that, like we mentioned, that moderate type Republican who tends, if any Republicans do well statewide in Illinois, those are the ones that tend to do the best.
Yeah, historically, people who are ultra-conservative or hard right, sort of the people who are flocking to Donald Trump, don't do well on a statewide level here in Illinois. And it's because historically the Republican Party here has been one of moderates, people who were fiscally conservative, socially progressive, you might say. People like former Governor Jim Thompson, former Governor Jim Edgar, years ago Everett McKinley Dirksen, who was a U.S. senator from the Peoria area. They were all folks who weren't hard ideologues, and they were also people who were pretty good at compromising with the other side of the aisle. And that seems to be something that's lost in Congress these days. Although, as Senator Kirk points out, he's tried to be kind of a conciliatory figure between the two major parties. He also, as a congressman, represented a fairly moderate district up the North Shore of Chicago for several terms. And he's the kind of Republican who could win in that district and was able, as Brian said, to win in the Tea Party wave of 2010. And now it looks like he's in trouble.
Amanda, let me go to you on this, because Mark Kirk has been around for 6 years on this statewide level, I mean, representing the state. Yet, because of some health issues and he suffered a stroke, he hasn't probably been able to be out and about as much as he wanted to be. We haven't seen him downstate probably as much as we would have otherwise. He seems to be saying and doing a lot of the things that you would think people that might vote for Hillary Clinton might be wanting to hear from him if they decided they wanted to go vote for the Republican U.S. Senate candidate. But apparently, at least according to this poll, it's not necessarily working.
Well, right. I think you have the factor of name recognition. You have the gaffes that he has made when he has publicly spoken. And that's why in that debate or editorial board before the Chicago Tribune, he was so soft-spoken, one would assume, and didn't really interrupt. I think that there's also the issue of conservative Republicans not appreciating his trying to take that middle of the road track, and Democrats saying, we've got a Democrat. They don't need necessarily a moderate Republican when they can go for Tammy Duckworth, who has received, I think, kind of the opposite of Kirk, some more national attention. I know she recently, for example, was in GQ because she has this, you know, powerful story of her time at war. And so you do have two disabled candidates that bring something different and kind of a different recognition that has brought this race some national attention. But you're really just seeing the kind of giving up on this some. I think even you have the Democratic at the national level, the Democrats Senate committee pulling out of a big planned ad campaign in Illinois because they are so confident in Duckworth's chances. And on the opposite level, you haven't seen as much the GOP coming in on Kirk's behalf. He has, I should note, gotten a clean bill of health from his doctor, who says that he, you know, may have some physical impairments following his stroke, but his brain, that's still intact. It's fine.
Yeah, Amanda, one thing you said I thought was interesting. In particular, Kirk has struggled to, or I shouldn't say struggled, but he is walking a tightrope, basically. He, after initially saying, you know, like a lot of Republicans, I'll support the nominee, has backed away from Donald Trump, and he's listed a number of people that he would write in. I think he's kind of settled on David Petraeus, the former CIA director and Army mm-hmm. general, who he says he's going to write in for president. But that risks alienating a lot of voters, right, who are big enthusiasts for Trump. And I know that, I think you talked to some people at the Republican convention in Cleveland who said, you know, why isn't Kirk here? Governor Rauner is another person who has sort of refused to endorse the nominee. That could potentially cost them from their core base of Republican voters who are enthusiastic about Trump.
Very much so. And whereas Governor Bruce Rauner had said back over really in the spring that he would support whoever the nominee is and does appear to be backing Trump, although very quietly, as you noted, Brian, Kirk is not doing so. So and has been more outspoken on that. And therefore, I think even more at greater risk than Bruce Rauner of losing the party base. Of course, we don't have Rauner on the ballot this time around or anything. But Kirk has to, I think, make more comments, and at least has, because he is on the ballot this time around.
Well, I was a little surprised at the numbers showing that Duckworth had such a big lead in that poll. What I was not surprised by, though, was when you look a little closer at that poll on another question, and that is, what do you think of the job Governor Rauner and then the legislative leaders, what kind of job they're doing? And pretty overwhelming disapproval there from the respondents of this poll. Brian?
Yeah, none of them are really particularly popular, whether you're talking about Governor Rauner, House Speaker Michael Madigan, or Senate President John Cullerton. Of course, the legislators are Democrats. The governor is a Republican. All of them are what pollsters say is underwater, meaning more people disapprove of their performance than approve. Madigan is doing the worst of all. 63% of people disapprove of him, 55% disapprove of Governor Rauner, and 41% disapprove of Senate President Cullerton. Cullerton kind of gets off a little easier there because a lot of people just don't really say they have an opinion or know who he is.
Well, I guess there is a surprise in there in the fact that Madigan even doing worse than Rauner, and yet the respondents to this poll overwhelmingly seem to be supporting Hillary Clinton, Tammy Duckworth. They seem to be more Democrats. So that's telling me even there's a lot of people who are Democratic voters not happy with what they're seeing in Springfield from either party.
Yeah, get this. Governor Rauner has a higher approval rating in the city of Chicago than Speaker Madigan does and Senate President Cullerton, which I found pretty surprising. Now, Chicago does have, you know, some areas that, you know, you would imagine would go a little more Republican. But even in his home city, the city that I think, as Charlie has pointed out on this show, he is, you know, his kind of entire career has been in part defined by looking out for the interests of Chicago in Springfield, in state government. And yet, in the city of Chicago, House Speaker Madigan has 56% disapproval, 31% approval.
Well, I think part of it is the fact that the governor has invested literally millions and millions of dollars in trying to portray Michael Madigan as the worst thing since the bubonic plague. And that kind of negative advertising also is heard in Chicago in the suburbs. And you have one of the major newspapers who are apparently joined at the hip with the governor, the Chicago Tribune, in terms of chastising Madigan and blaming him for all kinds of stuff. So the steady drumbeat of negative commercials, negative comments, Madigan's corrupt, the legislature's corrupt, that we heard from the governor even back before he was governor, when he was on the campaign trail, some of that stuff rubs off. And I think that's part of it.
Yeah, and obviously, when state government is in crisis the way it is, and we haven't had a budget for a year and a half, and the news out of state government is almost unrelentingly bleak, I would imagine that would reflect poorly on everyone in state government, no matter if you are, you know. And I should also say that, you know, do you approve of the job they're doing doesn't necessarily mean you would vote against them or would prefer the other party. You might want somebody else from, you know, a more liberal Democrat than House Speaker Madigan or something like that. I mean, so these are sort of a blunt way to understand the mood of the populace, but it's still interesting.
But I still think the negative advertising and the negative comments about Madigan factor in there. And as evidence, I would cite the fact that Senate President John Cullerton does not have the same kind of disapproval ratings. And the structure of government is such that the Senate has to agree with whatever the House does. The House has to agree with whatever the Senate does. The governor has to sign it for stuff to occur. Not that Cullerton has been in leadership as long as Madigan has, of course. But nonetheless, you never hear Cullerton described in the same negative terms as you do Speaker Madigan. And they're not running ads everywhere portraying Senate candidates as being puppets of John Cullerton, the way the Republican Party is running ads depicting incumbent Democrats as being a puppet of Mike Madigan.
Amanda, I know that
interestingly, Charlie, not just House members. The Republican Party has also said that Senate Democrats are puppets of Mike Madigan, even though they're in an entirely different chamber.
Man, that's a real stretch.
Well, and this is straight out of the Washington sort of playbook. I mean, there was a stretch there when pretty much every Democrat in the country who could in any way plausibly or even implausibly be tied to Nancy Pelosi was done so. And you just heard her name relentlessly in Republican advertising because her name was just sort of this was like talisman. I don't know if that's the right term, but it just carried so much weight among some members of the electorate that they would just try and tie anybody to her. And I think Speaker Madigan has become the same way
in
Illinois.
It must work. I mean, from what we're seeing, at least.
Well, I mean, I guess so. Speaker Madigan, you know, does still have supermajorities in the legislature, and there have been attempts to do this in the past, never with the amount of money, as Charlie has pointed out, that's happening now. And I guess we'll find out after November if it works or not.
Well, people tend to like, don't they? I mean, people tend to like certain policy positions, and then they tend to maybe get upset on other ones, such as, like, you raise my taxes, I don't like you, or you cut services, I don't like you. But when you don't do anything and can't even pass a budget, I mean, I think both parties have to wear a bit of a collar there, and I think in the end of the day, the voters let them know that.
Yeah, and I would also point out something else. John Jackson, the pollster from Southern Illinois University's Paul Simon Public Policy Institute that I talked to, had a really good paper earlier this year looking at the poll results over the last 8 years. And the title of this was Roots of Gridlock. And the question was, who really is to blame in Illinois? And one of his conclusions is that we are, the voters, the people of Illinois, because we want great services. We want good schools. We want nice roads. We want safe prisons. And we want low taxes, and we don't want higher property taxes, and we don't want fees and tolls. And those things are not really compatible. And the politicians have sold us a bill of goods by saying we don't have to raise taxes and we can still have all these great services. And we have been suckers in buying that all these years. Or maybe we just haven't been presented with better better options. But I mean, I think that's an interesting thing to keep in mind is, you know, when you hear a politician saying, I'm going to keep your taxes low and services high, you should sniff the air because there's something being shoveled nearby.
Well, and I think before we move off of this topic that while these numbers don't appear very good, I can't imagine they're going to get a lot better, not only in the next few months, but really in the next few years, because you're hearing a lot of discussion out there that we're going to need to raise taxes quite a bit. We're going to need to cut quite a bit, maybe make some other unpopular decisions. That's not necessarily going to make lawmakers nor the governor or anybody else in a decision-making position, a very popular person.
I have a hard time believing that anything is really going to improve and they're going to join hands and solve the problems of the world. I've been thinking a lot about there's a line in the movie, I can't remember if it's The Godfather Part 1 or The Godfather Part 2, where this state senator insults Corleone and he says, I'll wait for your answer tomorrow. And Corleone says, you can have my answer now. My offer is this, nothing. I will give you nothing. And I just have this fear that that's, I just don't know if we can, because why would Speaker Madigan want to give Governor Rauner, as he's going to be running for re-election, anything he can hang his hat on right for the next 2 years?
Well,
grab the cannolis, too.
Yeah. I mean, I think, Brian, that's very true. You touched on so much of this. Obviously, there's good reason to be very focused on the 2016 election. And though you have anybody who, particularly the Democrats, whose names have been mentioned as possibilities to run against Governor Bruce Rauner in 2 years' time, saying, hey, focus on one at a time, you've got to believe that there is a plenty of strategy on every politician's part, but particularly House Speaker Mike Madigan, who has this reputation for forward thinking of, as you noted, Brian, why give Rauner any wins now, the closer it gets to Rauner being on the ballot himself? By the way, it's not just him. That's also when you're going to have working into the equation that governor signing the map. If redistricting doesn't change, whoever that governor is presumably will have some power over how districts are drawn, yet another way that Democrats have been able, at least in part, to maintain their control in the General Assembly. So this is very much a long game.
Why is it when Illinois is number one in something, it's always you're a little questionable of whether it's a good thing? And one of the things that Illinois has apparently topped is TV advertising in a legislative race. It's a Chicago area. In fact, it involves the Chicago, city of Chicago in a portion of it, a legislative district. Amanda, give us an update on that race.
Well, so and that may well be why it is so expensive, of course, because you have ads running in the city of Chicago would be a lot more expensive than anywhere else in Illinois. And in fact, one of the most expensive markets, of course, in the entire country. So this is the only Republican that represents at least a portion of Chicago. The entire district isn't there. Representative Mike McAuliffe running against a woman named Mary Marwig. And this is really been a one of the chances that Republicans, that Democrats think they can steal from Republicans. Many of the other races are kind of on the opposite. Republicans think that they can break into Democrats' ranks. As I noted, this is one of the few that's reversing it. But Sean, you know, it's not just that race. There are, of course, as we've seen, a whole ton of money that has been poured into races all over Illinois, thanks mostly in part, yes, that Democrats have a lot of money that they've received from unions and are using Illinois' campaign finance laws to filter that down. But truly, you have seen Republicans do that. It's Governor Bruce Rauner this week also, after her husband loaned Comptroller Leslie Munger enough money to lift caps in that race. You then saw Munger receive great amounts of money from other Republican donors. Ken Griffin, who just was named again Illinois' richest man by Forbes magazine, as well as Mr. Dick Uihlein, giving her money. She had $5 million that she then sent several million of that to the state Republican Party. So you're really seeing all of that. And when you look at where Illinois compares along those lines, the Illinois State Senate is number two in ad spending at about $3.9 million compared to Florida. So, yeah, a larger state at $7.9 million. But it's really in Illinois House races where Illinois is breaking the bank, spending well more than any other legislative races in the nation. $10 million being spent on Illinois House races versus $1.6 million in California, $2.4 million in Texas.
Let me go back to that McAuliffe race. And Charlie, let me ask you this, because that's a name that has represented that district for a long time. Before Michael McAuliffe, it was his father, Roger McAuliffe, who passed away when he was in office, and his son took over for him. Normally, when somebody's been in office that long, they're really not targeted that much. Is it surprising to you to see this much money going into that one?
It is, because both Roger McAuliffe and his son, Michael, have done a pretty good job representing the interests of the people who live up in that area. It's basically the far northwest corner of Chicago, the 41st Ward, and it also runs over into parts of Park Ridge. And if you were up there driving or walking, you really wouldn't know when you left Chicago and got into Park Ridge, because the neighborhoods are very similar. There are a lot of police officers live there, a lot of firefighters, a lot of teachers, and it's pretty much a conservative neighborhood or area, and historically it's been more open to Republican candidates than a lot of other parts of the city. And so the fact that so much money is being spent against McAuliffe, and the fact that Governor Rauner and a couple of his buddies have plowed so much money into the race, it really is surprising. But on the other hand, a couple years ago, longtime state representatives Skip Saviano from Elmwood Park was beaten, a Republican, and Madigan and his forces decided to go after him, and they beat him in the general election.
And Amanda was right, I think. Brian, let me go to you. She was talking about the TV advertising, how much that cost there. We saw that. We've even seen that in Illinois Supreme Court retention races and the Metro East that go into areas like St. Louis, where people get on the television there. Money. It's just all about money in these races anymore, and you've got to have it to not only to win, but even in some cases to stay in office.
Yeah, you've got to have it, and increasingly, since Illinois put in quote-unquote campaign finance reforms a few years ago, you have to do very complicated things to move it around. I remember when I began covering the legislature, 10, 11 years ago, Illinois was viewed as sort of a wild west of campaign fundraising. You could raise unlimited amounts of money, but there was disclosure. And the idea was you would at least know who was trying to influence government. Now we put in these reforms, but there were all these pressure release valves put in place, as Amanda mentioned. You know, if you're a very wealthy person, the idea is, well, we didn't want a hardworking public servant to be swamped by a rich opponent, so that if they contribute enough to their own campaign, you take the caps off everyone in that election. And this is it's become an incredibly complicated system. People are really working hard to game it. I don't think anyone's mentioned yet, we saw the governor this week doing an in-kind contribution of $101,843 in radio advertising for Republican Jim Durkin. He's the minority leader of the Illinois House. Jim Durkin doesn't have an opponent. So what is the purpose of $100,000 in radio ads? Now, that I don't know what radio rates are in Chicago. That may not – or the suburbs. That may not buy very much radio advertising up there. But basically what this does is it triggers the Illinois law that now allows the House Republican leader to raise unlimited amounts of money in this election. So people are really working hard to game the system. I mean, the majority Democrats tried to kind of set up the rules so that they thought they could benefit from it. But of course, as always happens in politics, money finds a way. Both sides have found a way to spread the money around, particularly with Governor Rauner's wealth.
And Charlie, before we move off this, that is not really surprising. I remember when this law was passed, and I think there were people then who were saying this is what's going to happen. And that provision was put in specifically to give these – to give people who could raise quite a bit of money that ability to do so, and basically they wouldn't be having their hands tied.
Well, and interestingly, at the time, a lot of opposition came from Republicans arguing mm-hmm. that this would give an unfair advantage to the Democrats. But I suspect back then no one envisioned a guy like Bruce Rauner coming along who can bankroll candidates the way people would buy a Happy Meal at McDonald's.
And Amanda, before...
It's a bit of campaign finance karma.
Yeah.
Amanda,
well, and plus you have the U.S. Supreme Court ruling in Citizens United right. that you can have these secret operations, these dark money operations like the Liberty Principles PAC, where you don't really know where they're getting their money. And that kind of defeats, as Brian said, for a long time, the understanding or the thought process in Illinois was you can put all the money you want in campaigns as long as you tell us who's giving it, where it's coming from. The theory being that the citizenry would see if some politician was being bought by some interest or other. But with the impact of having the dark money in campaigns, you don't even have that anymore. Plus, you have no limits, effectively.
Amanda, just about 30 seconds here. Can you give us an update on this decision this week by the state treasurer regarding Wells Fargo?
Right. So after the, you know, surreptitious accounts set up without Wells Fargo's customers' knowledge, you've seen the state of Illinois, Treasurer Mike Furix, a Democrat, say that Illinois will no longer invest with Wells Fargo. It's something that Treasurer said the bank will lose millions on, but a spokesperson from Wells Fargo said, it's more like $50,000 a year. So not so much into Wells Fargo's bottom line, considering I believe its CEO was making somewhere along the range of or like got a bonus of $12 million or something to that effect. It is not just the state of Illinois. Also, the city of Chicago did the same.
Well, and some other states across the nation, too, are doing this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
All right. That will send us off to our notes from the field. Brian Mackey.
Yeah, in Chicago, Alderman Brendan Riley, who has part of the downtown area, is working with his fellow aldermen and Mayor Rahm Emanuel to remove a Trump Plaza sign. Chicago's big on these honorary street names. They don't officially rename the street. It's a little additional brown sign that goes under the regular green street sign. But they named this when Trump put his big hotel up there. And now that Trump has made the violence in Chicago one of the centerpieces of his campaign rhetoric, they're saying, we want to take it down. Interestingly enough, both Alderman Riley and Mayor Emanuel have gotten donations from Trump in what apparently were happier, more harmonious days.
Amanda?
Well, I am a Chicago White Sox fan, and I have a feeling that tickets are hard enough to get that even if I wanted to go to the Cubs playoff game on Friday night, I couldn't get a ticket. That is not, however, the case for legislators and aldermen who represent the city of Chicago. They were given an opportunity to buy tickets at face value after there was a ethical uproar over this of sorts in terms of how they got these dibs. It turns out that any legislator and alderman who does, in fact, go, politicians, must be in attendance and they'll be announced. So while Cubs fans may be cheering for their team, one will anticipate a whole lot of booing for those politicians.
And that will do it for today's show. You can get a podcast of this show at nprillinois.org and also find us on NPR One. Just look for State Week. Our members of our broadcast today included Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Brian Mackey. I'm Sean Crawford.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.